We'll touch base later, maybe.
Log Talk Radio.
Okay, I got it. I think.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the boat, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge for a fresh new start. They never will bring you there. So let's talk about it.
Everyone, this is Book Talk with Fran Lewis, I think, brought to you by MJ Network, and this is going to be so much fun. Derek McFadden, Dick Belsky, Lee Matthew Goldberg, Jeff Bond, and Charles Salzberg are all here. Vincent said hi from Cairo. That's it. What can I say? And I had a seminar with my
Am I the only one, Fran, who has trouble just, like, keeping up with Vincent? I mean, every time I turn around, he's somewhere else. Now he's in Cairo.
Yeah, but I told him that you have to let us know you're alive because it's not exactly safe to go anywhere anymore.
If you don't see a book from him every week, a new book, then you
Something's
should worry.
Yeah.
I know.
Otherwise, he's fine.
He's posting pictures of pyramids and all sorts of great stuff online, so I know he's there.
Well, I just finished interviewing an author that wrote Covert in Cairo in 1917. It was interesting yesterday. So I'm learning too much. But I did a seminar with my reading professor last month who really made me too smart and made me answer all the questions, which I did. So I began to wonder questioning skills. And I did that for grades K to 12. But there are different ways that you guys interview, right? And you write reviews. And I'm doing a tour with Partners in Crime, and I'm ready to cry. Seriously, I got some really rotten reviews, but what can I say? They didn't understand the book, and that's what can you do? So different ways to create a question. So what are some of the types of questions that you, when you're doing an interview or you're being interviewed, that you would prefer being asked? Would you prefer just a general summary or a plot or setting a conflict, or there are certain questions that you'd rather not answer?
I think it depends. For me, oftentimes open-ended questions are best for conversation. If you want a summary, I can give you that. I'm an author. I know my own books. But I tend to think that open-ended questions are best for conversation starters anyway.
Dick and I, obviously, we did this for a living. I was a magazine journalist and interviewed like hundreds, and so did. And I have found that kind of like specific questions are always better, I think, because it helps the person who's being interviewed. Otherwise, it's just too big a topic, whatever it is. If you do it very generally. And the most important thing, I think, and I'm sure Dick will agree, I don't know if you other guys have done a lot of them, but it's listening to the person you're interviewing. Not be so involved in, oh, what's my next question or whatever. It's really a conversation, not an interview. I mean, that's the way I found it. It works best.
Yeah, as usual, I pretty much agree with everything that Charles said. And Charles and I don't know about the rest of you, but both of us, in addition to our journalism backgrounds, we sort of wear two hats because we get interviewed for our books, but then we interview other authors because both of us are contributing writers to the Big Thrill magazine. And so it's kind of interesting. You know, I tend to ask the kind of questions, I guess, that I would like people to ask me. And to me, the overriding thing is whether I'm being asked a question or whether I'm asking a question, I want the interviewer – I want to get the feeling that the interview gets me and gets the book, you know. You know, that the questions are you know, like, oh, my gosh, he really understood that about the book, you know, as opposed to, you know, the overall summary. And I try to do the same when I'm talking to people. And the one additional thing when I'm interviewing people, I tend to talk to them sometimes about things that may not actually be a part of the final interview. Like, we'll talk about where they live. You know, if I'm talking to a guy who's written TV scripts, I interviewed Lee Goldberg, you know, not long ago, and he would tell me chapter and verse about all his TV shows. A lot of that's never going to make it in the piece, but A, it's interesting, and B, I think it helps you to get a better interview in the end.
Well, also what you're doing, Dick, and it's a good point, and I do it all, is you're connecting with the person on kind of a non-business level. So I would know something about the person and try to find something I might. For instance, when I was years ago and I was interviewing Amanda Plummer, I knew that she worked with certain people, and I knew that she was in, you know, she did the doctoral book. And so it really does help is to establish that rapport. And that really establishes that it's a conversation, not an interview.
Does it make it easier because I send you the questions first? And
no, never.
Does it?
No.
You don't even send the questions?
Never for me. I would never give them the questions first or don't get questions. We just, as Charles said, you try and make it a conversation. It's kind of like when we go to conferences, mm-hmm. and you know, some of the panel people will, you know, set it up with all the questions we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Those panels are generally pretty boring. I have found that the best panels is where everybody kind of just wings it and talks. So that's kind of the way I do interviews.
Partners in Crime likes when I send the questions so that everybody knows them, and I don't blindside people anyway, so it doesn't matter.
I mean, I hope you're not offended, Fran, but I don't read the questions at all because
me either.
That's
it's
okay.
Exactly what Dick said. No, it's I need to know the topic, but it won't be fresh because I'll tend to think, oh, this is what I should answer, this is what I should answer.
I don't want my answers to be stayed. And so the other thing is, and I wonder, you guys do some interviews for magazines. My interviews are for podcasts, you know, when I'm hosting podcasts. Mm-hmm. And so what you said about making the person feel comfortable, asking questions that are outside of the book,
uh-huh.
you do that so that they feel comfortable, that you're, friendly, and you get a better interview out of it.
Exactly.
That's interesting because the person that used to do that and never sent me the questions, and unfortunately she passed away, was Maxine Thompson on Authors First, but I haven't gotten interviewed for accusations. Nobody's asked me any questions. I don't even know if some people read it, some people didn't. So asking the right questions is crucial. I know that. And certain kinds of questions I know people don't want to ask. So prompting critical thinking or learning, understanding how a person came to explore. So did you ever get it where you asked somebody, where do you live or why did you write the book and they don't want to tell you? Because I've had, you know, authors, I have to be really careful.
They're kind of stupid if they do, because doing them a favor. So to avoid a question, unless it's so personal, it's kind of self-defeating. So I don't know how often you'd get something like that, but I would guess very rarely.
Yeah, they're there to get interviewed by you to promote the book. Now, the
mm-hmm.
difference, I think, Fran, between I do a podcast that I edit afterwards. Your podcasts are live. So, like, I can ask questions, and if they don't want to answer it, I can edit around it. Yours is different because we're live now. So whatever anybody says is what goes out. That's a different thing.
That they could edit it out. And my nephew is now doing my promos. He's great. So if I hear something or something, I ask DJ to try to get rid of it. But you really can't. They're stuck with it.
You really can't, no.
Well, let me just say one thing about the interviews is that the other thing that I have found, and I've interviewed an awful lot of big-name authors, which has nothing to do with me. It's just the assignments I've gotten. And so much depends on the author themselves. And, you know, by far, the majority of people, and I'm talking about big name people, you know, whether it be Michael Conley or I just interviewed recently Jonathan Kellerman for the first time, Tess Garrison, and they're like wonderful. They're open. They talk to you. They seem like they like you. And every once in a while, and obviously I'm not going to mention any names, every once in a while you get one who, you know, clearly is not involved. They don't want to do it. They don't really think much of you. And that makes for a difficult interview. And in answer to your other question, I've had weird things like ask a question like, some simple thing like, where did you get this, where did this character come from, or how did you come up with the idea for this character? And they won't answer it. They'll just leave it blank, or it's like not worth their, So
that is weird.
I just think it doesn't happen a lot. And again, virtually, I would say, probably more than 90% of the authors I've done have been wonderful on every level. And like, you almost want to like, I wish I could be friends with Jonathan Kellerman because he's so nice, But every once in a while, you'll find someone, and that's a deadly interview. I think, like Charles, you're probably the same way. I think I'm a good enough writer that I can cover that up when I do the piece, and so it doesn't come through when the piece appears in the big thrill.
Dick, I once did a piece on Colin Farrell, and he wouldn't sit for an interview. So I wrote the whole piece without aimed it of trying to pin him down. So, and the other thing, Fran, for you personally to remember is, what's better if someone comes up to you and says, "How are you today, Fran?" which is so open-ended, as opposed to, "Hey, Fran, how's your back? I know you had a back problem." It's a lot easier for the interviewee to do that because it's specific, as opposed to, "How are you? Well, what do you mean, how am I? I mean, am I healthy? Am I in a good mood?" So that's an example that you can tell yourself
if you have an author. This happened last year, I won't say who it was. I was online. I was waiting for the author to call in, and I get a call on my cell phone from the publicist that said, "He doesn't like your questions." And they asked for the questions. I said, "If he didn't like my questions," and they weren't pointed. They were, vague, whatever. I said, "You should have called me yesterday, and I might have changed it." Well, can you do
the
it now?
Thing.
I said, I'll tell you what, I'm not doing the interview and I'm not reading any more of his books, because I thought that was rude. And he even said
to me. Well, the other thing, as an author, you can duck the questions and still answer them.
Yeah.
That's exactly what politicians do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that authors have different perspectives on is spoilers.
Yeah.
And, what is – obviously, if somebody asks you point blank about, the big twist at the end of the book, you're not going to answer that question.
No.
But I think sometimes authors have a range of ideas about, what spoils or influences the reader response to a book that go beyond what other authors might do. And so, if you want to get deep into a certain character, I'm not saying that's what happened with you in this instance, Fran, of course, but I think authors, some are really stingy about what they want the readers to experience for the first time themselves on the read, and others are kind of more loosey-goosey with it. I tend to be the latter, but I think that can influence it as well.
No, I know, because I interviews Iris Johansson, and Iris likes the questions beforehand. She likes to know, and I tell her, anything you don't want to answer, just cross out. And that's what they do. So I never have a problem. And then she'll answer them anyway. She's great. But then I am interviewing Jane Ann Krantz in 2 weeks. And she does, she's into dreams and psychological dreams. So we'll see whether she usually answers, and if she doesn't want to, I told them to exit out. Because they asked for the interview. I didn't.
Well, one other thing, Fran, that comes from my journalism background when I ask questions, I'm always thinking about what's the lead of my article going to be. The lead is generally not, so-and-so put out a book. I want some angle, I'm not necessarily controversial, but it could be controversial. And so if I know, for instance, this guy has talked about, he includes COVID or doesn't include COVID in his book and why he did it. I'm going to ask that question because I want to get his response. Or, obviously there are other hot button issues that you can touch on. So, I'm not going to bring them up out of the blue, but a lot of times you can tell from an author, like if I ask a specific question, I will get a really interesting answer. And that's what I'm always thinking about, because I'm thinking, what am I going to lead this article with? And that, I sort of start out from that position.
That's interesting. But what if you ask somebody what surprised you the most when you wrote the book? Would they answer that? Well, how did you up with the subject of the book, and how do you make your book interesting so that people don't say it's the same character but just another plot and you're going to need a snooze pill?
If you're an author and you can't answer what surprised you the most or how you came up with your characters, then you're just a really bad interview to get. Because, I mean, literally, you should know that. If you're doing press, you're doing more than one interview, and you're probably hearing the same questions. So you're going to do some stuff that's by rote, but you should have that answer ready.
That's pretty true.
The other part of that is, you know, different authors have different answers for that question. You know, it's the old, are you a pantser or a plotter? I just interviewed a few days ago, I interviewed Riley Sager. His plots are like Stephen King twists. I mean, amazing. And I said, did you have any idea where this was going? And because, you know, it really totally surprises you. And he's like, I knew the beginning. I knew what the story was going to be, and I knew the ending. I knew that all before I started. And I interviewed Tess Gerritsen, and she's like, I'm in the middle of the book, and I have no idea. how it's going to end. So I think a lot of it, you know, like I say, you can get different answers from different people, but all those answers are interesting, I think, as a writer.
She's terrific. She's coming on September 20th. I'm getting the first interview with her new book, Spy on the Coast.
Yeah, she's really good.
Not only that, she answers my questions, and if she doesn't, we change the subject to talk about shopping and stuff like that are much more important.
She does what you always hope an author will do. She emailed me after my article appeared and told me how much she loved it. So right there,
hey, no one's ever done that for me. That is a good tip.
Yeah, she usually thanks me for my review, which means at least I didn't mess up and do something, whatever. So the other question is this. I mean, there are an author and an interviewer. You know your interviews. You know who you're going to interview. But do you ever get a situation where they hang up in the middle of the interview?
I've never had that.
Not here, no.
Me neither.
You just never know. Jeff, did you ever have a problem with that? With somebody interviewing somebody or talking, and all of a sudden they just got quiet and they didn't want to do anything?
I would love that to happen because it gives you something to write about, something dramatic to write about.
You stormed off.
I'm obviously too nice. I haven't pissed anyone off, except Jerry West.
Jerry West.
He got close.
He was pretty upset about that whole series that came out, right? That portrayed him pretty negatively.
I didn't know this at the time, but he suffered from depression. But I went all the way out. This was for my book, From Set Shot to Slam Dunk. I went all the way out there, and to him, say for certain questions, I don't want to answer that, which is fine for me. They weren't particularly controversial questions. So I kept thinking, well, he doesn't really want to be interviewed. Why did he say yes?
Does an author say yes, or do you have a publicist? Because I get them through the publicist, and now I get, this person wants to be on your show, and will you read the book? And it depends. There are certain books I won't read, and don't give me self-help, because forget it. But what happens if you're interviewing somebody, and you're reading a book, and it's really bad?
With my podcast, oftentimes I am talking to the publicist first, so I know the author wants to be interviewed. If I'm reading a book and it's bad, I mean, I'm not going to say it's bad on the show. I'm going to say, wow, thanks for being on. You know, I'm going to be as nice as possible. Absolutely.
Yeah. I lie a lot. I'm not, you know, it doesn't happen a lot, but I'll read a book and it, you know, can be a bestseller sometimes. And you're like, oh my gosh, why is this a bestseller? I don't think, and because I'm not doing a book review, I'm doing an interview for a very author-friendly publication, The Big Thrill, which is to support authors. So I talk about the book in a, I just don't think from my article anybody would. ever get the realization that I didn't like that particular book. Now, the other way around, I mean, I can, if I love a book, I may put adjectives and stuff in there that make it clear how much I like.
Yeah, 100%, sure.
Yeah, it's.
No,
I would agree about that. But the thing is, it's why I don't want to really review books anymore. Mm-hmm. I used to do. I probably did close to 100 for the New York Times. But the other thing, Fran, to go back a little, in my experience, mm-hmm. and this is just magazines, so I don't know if it's true of newspapers, the publicist is your natural enemy, especially mm-hmm. if they sit in on the interview, because they are so hypersensitive that the person being interviewed is going to say something controversial or bad or whatever. So if you're doing an in-person interview and the publicist insists on being there, or the subject insists on having that person there, the best mm-hmm. is if they keep totally silent and don't interfere with it, because they have a different agenda than I do as a magazine. I want to make it entertaining and truthful. And, yeah, sometimes you hit upon those controversial subjects, and I'd rather have the person say, I'd rather not talk about it, than a publicist to, get involved and screw it up.
You don't,
for me,
you don't
that's the best
keep
part
them
of...
silent? You don't put them on mute? Because I do. Put them on mute.
Well,
and
for me,
say,
that's the best
know...
part of doing a podcast, though, is that those
yeah.
publicists, they set it up, and then it's up to me and the author, and it's a one-on-one thing. So I never have that issue, and I'm very grateful
that's
for
perfect.
It. Sometimes the publicist wants to listen afterwards, but, yeah, by then
yeah.
I've edited it, and it sounds good. So, you know.
I haven't had a publicist that told me that they didn't like the interview or anything like that, so at least that's something. But I've had a few. I interviewed Ocean View Publishing, keeps me nice and busy, by the way. And
I
interviewed the author of Liquid Shades of Blue on Monday. That was fantastic. He answered all my questions. You know, short, sweet. I had about 100. I had to add more. He was fantastic. And I really enjoyed reading. I just finished Burning Distance. It's excellent. People need to read that. That was really good. So, but what happens when you ask a person, how did you create the project? Well, how did you create the subject for your book, and they don't want to answer you? Are they afraid you're going to steal it?
No, because it's out already.
If it's been published, they shouldn't. Yep. If it's been published, they should not be afraid of that, or they don't know how the business works.
Yeah, I know. I mean, seriously.
If I steal something that's already out, then I'm just copycatting. You know, if I go, well, Harry Potter's really good, so I'm just going to write that again. That doesn't work. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, people should not be afraid of that.
Yeah, and I always think that's a pretty good, as an author, I kind of like that question to start
really?
An interview
yeah.
because if somebody
I'll
asks,
remember
you know,
that
well,
one.
What was the genesis of the idea? Like, you know, usually it kind of gets the juices flowing. It has something to do with theme a lot of the time, you know, depending on what your answer is. But I think when you sit down and start to talk about why you spent, you know, a year of your life or 8 months or 15 months or however long it was, I think that tends to loosen you up and get the juices flowing in an interview.
And when I was saying that an open-ended question is good, I was talking about that type of open-ended question.
Mm-hmm.
As an author, I can take that question anywhere.
Well, that's interesting. Vincent, Patrick, and David Putnam are going to do something really weird in August. We're going to talk about how do you create a character that's off the wall and outrageous. They volunteered.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm serious. So I'm going to have to come up with something really cool for that. The other question that people don't want to answer is, how do you manage your work schedule, and what do you think your strength is as a writer? Why don't people want to answer that? That's not a, you know, when I get an author, I know that's not going to answer my questions based on, even though their publicist answered the questions, you have to come up with an auxiliary plan here, and I, you know, wind up printing something out as I'm doing it. So, what would be so terrible if they said, what's your strength as a writer? What do you think makes a good story? And they don't want to answer that.
I wonder.
Those are good questions, I thought.
I wonder if when you ask them what's your strength as a writer, their first thought is, well, if they find out what my strengths are, they're going to find out what my weaknesses are. Mm. So
I don't want to ask that question. I don't care.
But as an author, we get in our heads a lot. That's what we do. We spend all day in our head. So if you ask, what is your strength? I know that answer, and I can answer that. But I also know the weakness answer, and I don't want to say what that is most of the time.
I don't think I ask negative questions.
The other thing is, it's not that they won't answer. It's that they can't answer because for various reasons. Either that's not the way they think in terms of big concepts or whatever your question is. So I wouldn't take it as they won't answer. It's just
it's
that they might not have an answer that they think is good enough.
Yeah.
Fran, I think the other issue for you, which is probably different, at least certainly for me, is, you know, you interview so many authors. I mean, you're going to get all these variations. I mean, I like maybe talk, you know, I don't know, 10 a year or something like that. And you know, most of them are very forthcoming, and I don't have that. But you interview, 100, 200 people a year. And so you're getting a lot of different personalities in there. So, you know, maybe that's just inevitable. But to me, if somebody doesn't want to answer the question, and once or twice it's happened to me, and not a particularly controversial question, you just move on. I mean, you know, it's not an adversarial interview. So, you know, whatever their reason, and they might have some very personal reason. Maybe there was something in their personal life that got them to write that story, and they don't want to talk about that. So if they say no, I just move on to another question.
And my first book was very autobiographical, and there is some stuff in there about sexual abuse. And if anybody ever asks me about it, I just move on. I move to a different question.
Yeah. Another thing, Fran, that interviewers forget is if it's a new book, that means it's been in the works for a year. And it may be that the author hasn't reread it in 2 years, you know, because of all the process. So often fans know, they ask questions, and because they're more, they have a better sense of the book because they've just read it. Whereas we honestly, we write so many books and so many plots or whatever, is I might not remember as much as the person who just wrote it.
Yeah, you might have moved on to a different book by then too.
Book club discussions where, you know, I'll be bombarded with questions about the intricacies of some relationship, and I'm kind of two books removed from that, you know, and my head is with all these new characters, you know.
It's worse. I think it's worse when you're writing this. Like I just finished the sixth book in a series, and I think it's worse with it because, you know, like everybody was just saying, by the time you're being interviewed for the book that's out, you've already either well into or maybe finished the next book in the series, and it's the same character, some of the same people. And
we're in different spots.
Yeah, and I'll say something like, she's with, and the interviewer would say, well, who's, you know, and then you realize, oh, no, I'm sorry, I was talking about the previous book. But, yeah, it's tough to remember everything because you've written it so long ago.
Well, it's hard for me, too. Sometimes I get the book in January, and I'm interviewing them in June. Then I have to reread it, I'm excited. Richard North Patterson's coming on next month on the 13th. And, you know, I have the book memorized, trust me.
But you're not as excited about that interview as you are about this interview, right?
No, I'm not.
This one's
keeping me on my toes, let me tell you. So what would happen instead of I send you questions if you sent me, like, talking points or generalizations about the book that you want to talk about, and I'll just come up with whatever comes up in my brain?
That becomes a homework assignment for me.
That's just what I was thinking,
Because that's when it's like on the fly and it becomes a conversation. So, like, I want to be surprised in an interview when I'm being interviewed.
Absolutely.
Oh, I promise. Don't worry. I'll come up with something. According to my professor, he said I really come up with something.
Yeah. But, Fran, you might be just better off just to tell what the topic is, what the general topic is.
Okay.
Because people will then, especially writers, they'll think about the topic and be prepared with answers even without specific questions if they know that general what the subject of the, this particular interview is or the theme.
Yeah, I mean, we've known what this was for a while. We've all, you know, and we've all probably been thinking about, okay, here are some of the questions she might ask, but there might be other ones. So, like I said, I didn't look at your questions, Fran. I appreciate you send them, but I would rather, and especially on a panel show where there's a bunch of us, I think that the conversation, like, I want to hear what the other guys say, and I want to play off of that.
Yeah, and I just I want to speak up for the new authors here, Fran, because I know we've got a lot of guys who are really comfortable in this format and everything, but as somebody said, Fran, you interview all kinds of people. Many of the people you interview are kind of new authors. I think I did an interview with you with my first book that I put out, and it was very helpful for me, or at least kind of anxiety-reducing, to have the questions in advance. So I think it kind of depends on your circumstances. I do think your questions being sent out there in advance for a lot of authors are helpful in that way. So it kind of depends who you're dealing with, I think.
Well,
okay.
I read the questions, but I'm always really happy when we can have a situation like we're having now where we're not locked into the questions. We can just have a discussion, and that obviously works the best.
Yeah.
Well, you're doing something. Do you ever have an interview where – well, I did this for my reading professor. That's why he got me started on questions, and he picks the questions. I don't get to pick them. He even picks the topic. Then I get to do the research. He's keeping me on my toes. He's the reason why I can do what I do. But we did something called reciprocal questions. So do you ever have an interview where you ask a question and the author asks you one back to see what you would answer? Because I had that with several authors recently that said, well, we know you read the book. Well, did you remember this? And they started asking me questions about the book to see if I really knew what I was talking about. Thank God I did.
I was going to say, oftentimes you want that because that spurs conversation. I do, kind of. I mean,
that's exactly what I was going to say is then it's a conversation. I mean, you don't want to dominate it with your answers, but I think it's a healthy sign if someone I'm interviewing asks me a question. I'm not offended or pissed off at all.
It shows their
No, they asked me why I started to do this, how I created my questions. That's not so hard. And then they actually asked me a pointed ply question, and it was a good thing the book was in front of me. But I do know. I mean, and then something, what happens when you ask a question about a character? Because this happened recently, and the author doesn't remember who the character is. And they ask you to look it up and remind them. Seriously, they do.
That's what we were talking about, Fran, just a few minutes ago. You know, that's actually happened once or twice with you and me in the past where you'll say, but what about, you know, when so-and-so does this? And I have to pause for a second because I have to try and remember who that character was and what they did. And again, so much of this is because the author hasn't written the book before he comes on your show or does the interview. He's written the book, you know, maybe at least
years
a year
ago.
Earlier, maybe more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. But before I forget, I don't want to forget anymore. next Tuesday, Alan Zandransky, Incident at San Miguel. On the 17th, David Putnam has his new Moonlight series. Well, he's had a few, but I just read one. He's coming on the 18th at 12. Former FBI agent Mark Boughton. This book was so cool. Does Your Guy Lie? On the 22nd, DP's coming on with Cultured. On the 24th, MP Woodward is coming on with Dead Drop. That's a great book. Amanda Quick is coming on the 25th with The Bride Will White at 12 o'clock. And on the 30th, Thunder Road. It's a really interesting book about 1947 and the situation. And on the 1st, we got James McCrone and Bastard Verdict. And that was really interesting about that time period. That's before I forget anything that I'm doing. Okay, so the next question is, did you ever ask a reader what they think what do readers ever think of your work? Do they ever ask you that, or do you ever ask them, what do our readers that read your book think about what they wrote?
No, because they'll answer you.
Very funny.
Sometimes I get, what are your readers saying? And sometimes I don't know, so I have to kind of make it up. I don't know. I hope they like it.
But you know something, friend, if you're really good, and all these guys are and they're experienced, even if it's your first novel, is you learn how to deal with that. So I remember when I was being on a radio show years ago when I did my basketball book, and it was a call-in. And first of all, if you're on the radio, what I learned is people think you are an expert, whether you are or aren't. If you wouldn't, to them, if you're on the radio, you must be an expert. So this guy calls up and he says, "What did you think about that the fifth game of the 2001 playoffs between the Celtics and the Lakers?" I have no idea what he was talking about. So you fake it and you say, "Yeah, that was a great game," and boom, you're out of it. So if especially if you guys who do the interviews have been through all that stuff and you sort of, you can figure out, you get to be pretty good on your feet is what I'm saying. So because of course there are questions that, again, not that you won't answer, but you can't answer because you don't remember.
Well how about this one? I got a review from an author on my tour. And the first two, one said, "I really didn't understand the book." I don't know how she didn't understand it because it was explained in the synopsis and whatever. And the second one said, "It was a good book, and I had three people edit it, plus I had to ask people to read it. We thought it was like rough draft. The stories weren't, each were different because they were dictated to me by the dead person that actually happened to. And obviously you need some help editing." And she put it on
Amazon. I'll give you the advice that a friend of mine gave me, which is the best.
I didn't even care.
But here's the deal. If it's a rave review or a good review, it goes in your genius box. If it's a bad review, or so, it goes in the idiot box. So that way,
exactly,
you know, you feel, because
that's,
you are going to get bad reviews.
Yeah, well, that was insulting because it was perfectly edited. I even had my nephew, who is fantastic in that, and I said, you know, "Josh, could you read this?" And then I had three other people read it. I said, "Just check for grammar errors and whatever." There weren't any, and she just said she didn't like the stories. And the other one said she didn't understand that there were dead bodies that were dictating the story to me. Those were, five of the stories were true.
Well, it's a good reason not to read reviews, especially Amazon reviews, because you don't know who that person is.
No, actually, it was part of the Partners in Crime tour that I'm on right now.
In terms of reader response, which was, I think, the original, you know, the question of, like, when readers come up to you with, you know, whatever, their feelings, you know, I find certainly in person, if you're at a conference or a bookstore or something, almost every reader that's going to come up to you is going to be positive. You know, I'm not too
yeah,
I've never
there
heard
for that reason.
Where somebody comes up and says, "Boy, you, that's a load of crap," or whatever, you know. And the same with, you know, you get emails from somebody say, "Hey, I just read your book. I really loved it. You know, do you have other books out?" Things like that. Not too many people will go out of their way to be critical. Now, they will, I think as someone, I guess Charles said, like in an Amazon review, because they're basically, you don't have to put your name on it. And, you know, those...
They're anonymous. They can do that. Yeah.
And those can be... And those, I mean, yeah, the number one rule is, A, never respond, and B, just, you got to just put it out of your head, because some of them are really crazy. Like you know, you'll get a whole bunch of 4 or 5 star reviews telling people how much you like the character or whatever, and then somebody will give you, you know, 1 or 0 stars saying, "Oh, what a boring character," you know. Or the best one I ever got was somebody said, "Well, this guy obviously doesn't know anything about how a newsroom works," you know. Now, I spent like most of my life in the newsroom. So my thought is, like, if you're going to criticize, you can criticize me on, like, all sorts of levels, but, you know, not that I don't understand how a newsroom works. So, but anybody can say anything they want.
And it gives them power. It's a certain, it's a power.
You know, what happens when you get one and you know the person didn't read the book, and the person was, like, a troll and wrote,
and same thing.
The book is worth it. It's not worth the paper was written on. I didn't answer
the
that.
The way you have to... They want that back and forth of like then saying how horrible it is. So if you just ignore it, then it goes away. Then they don't exist.
The way
you
have to look at Amazon. Review, I was going to say, the only thing about a bad review on Amazon, Fran, that you should be happy about is the fact that, you know, as you get more reviews, your number rises, and that helps you, you know, hopefully sell more books. So,
that's,
you know,
what I was
if,
it changes
if
10 the algorithm.
People write bad reviews, that helps your algorithm or whatever it is, you know, to with Amazon, because, you know, they're not necessarily differentiating on the number of stars. They're, a lot of it is based on how many reviews you actually get.
Well,
yeah,
actually,
yeah.
It's funny
I
because the people in the bank yesterday, the girl said, I read your reviews. Do you have a book for me? And I had to hand one to the teller and to the girl that helped me fix the problem. And they actually knew about it. And they said, well, let me know what you think when I come back in next time. They actually asked for the book when I walked through the door. That's probably how I got my problem solved, because I gave them the book. But I haven't been interviewed for this one, no. And then I have 7 interviews. 5 are pretty good, really nice, and the other 2 I could live without. And you know
and
what?
Going back to one of your
the other thing you got to remember about the negative reviews like that, I mean, a lot of times if you're out there doing a lot of press and doing a lot of promos, you're giving your book away to a lot of people. And you're going to have a bunch of people who come to your book because, you know, they got it discounted or free, and they're people that read other kinds of books, right? And they read your book, and it's not what they were looking for.
Different
because it's not what you wrote.
Yeah.
And so, you know, their review is, I hated this character. I was, you know, it's because you're kind of out of their comfort zone, and it's not a book that they would have organically chosen. So I think you've got to remember that, too, about a review like that.
Fran,
going
think
back
I'm just going to say real quick. Think about this. If you're an umpire or a referee in any sport, whatever call you make, 50% of the people are not going to be happy with it. So
correct.
We're doing pretty well if, you know, if every once in a while we get a negative review.
I agree.
And
my nephew plays baseball, and I watch his game, and then I text my brother to tell him the umpire needs a pair of glasses because he didn't quite make the call right. And then my brother texts me back, how do you know? Because I can watch it on my computer. I have a better screen than they do watching it in person. So, yeah, you're right. they could do that. So what are the kind of questions that you, as authors, that if I'm going to interview you ever, whenever, you never know with me, I'm booked until the end of August, so if anybody has anything coming in, Gavin, if you have something, or Jeff, or anybody has anything coming in, let me know, because I can't believe it till the end of August. Wow. So what kind of questions would you, besides open-ended, what type of questions would you want to be answered, want me to ask, and what kind do you think I should just leave out? Like, what's the story about, you don't care?
Don't ask me if I sleep in the nude.
That's a good question. That would be a good question. We could take pictures. I could put those on the slideshow.
Well, I personally, honestly, I can't think of a question that I would be offended if someone asked. I mean, it may not be a question I have an answer for. I like the question, but I honestly can't think. Ask anything you want. Doesn't mean I have to answer it, but I don't care.
No, I mean, I was asked a question. What happened with your sister when this happened? Because my sister died, and I still don't know why. And it wasn't even in the book. They must have looked it up or something. And I sort of answered it, and I didn't really want to, because it was kind of hard to answer her, because I don't know.
Well, just say that it's a tough subject for you, and you'd rather not talk about it. And any interviewer who's done these things respects that, you know.
I don't see it as being a big issue. I think like 99.9% of the questions, you know, are just things you would have any of us would have no problem answering.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like Charles said. I mean, the thing came up earlier about, you know, I don't know if there's some background about, I don't know, anything, sexual abuse or something that you don't want to talk about, then you just, I can't imagine an interview where that if you said, that's a very personal issue, I'd rather not get into that. I just can't imagine anybody that would, you know, would make
there's
a big
no
deal
one that
it.
Would push that. I mean, they're going to move on to their next question. I mean, and what you said earlier, Fran, about what it was like with authors when you have to hold their hand or whatever. Some authors you do, but that's because oftentimes that's because they're new and they want you to do that. And
we're also very insecure people.
Well, I had an
author
last year that's very famous. I never interviewed her before, and the interview took a half an hour because she just didn't answer the question. She just said, I don't know, or I can't remember, and I tried to help her, and then she just answered them with one word, whatever, so I just said, you know what,
you're going to get
interviews. Maybe we'll just
like
cut
sometimes.
It short. And then she said, I would like another interview with you. I said, well, maybe at a later time when you feel more comfortable. And she thanked us for the interview.
I wonder if it's different for somebody like me who does a podcast or for somebody like them who is writing for magazines. I mean, do you guys have to really work it when you get an interview like that? I mean, I would.
Well, you know,
Sonny,
I'll give you an example because there. Often, I was doing a profile of Meg Ryan, and it was going to be a cover story. And there was a lot of stuff in the papers about her relationship with her mother. And so I have to ask that question. And she said, I'd rather not talk about it, which was fine. Mm. But as a writer, all I did was I called up Nora Ephron and said and asked her about Meg's relationship with her mother. And she said, oh, you're better off talking to, at the time it was Randy Quaid's wife, because Dennis Quaid had been married to her. And I got great quotes. So you can kind of work around it. And the other real quick thing I'll answer is I was doing a profile of Brett Butler, the comedian, and she had a horrible life. She was an alcoholic, a drug addict. She'd been shot at by her husband. She was in a near-fatal car crash. And the magazine, what they wanted to know, they told me, is was she ever worried about the health implications of breast implants? Because she had breast implants. You save that question for the end. As you're walking out the door, you ask that question. Otherwise, you know, you could lose them forever. And so I asked her the question, and she said, honey, wouldn't it be ironic, after all I've been through, if my tits killed me? And it was a great quote, and I used it. They let me use it in the magazine. So what I'm saying, if you're experienced in anything, you've come across something. So even you guys who don't have a background necessarily in journalism, you have a life. You have life experience. So you use it, you know, when you're being interviewed or when you interview someone.
And just one more thought on that is that the kind of interviews where pretty much virtually any author interviews is being interviewed by anybody. It generally it's a friendly interview. It's not an adversarial. This isn't a situation like where a member of the Biden administration is on Fox News and there's all these
right.
We're gonna get you and all that kind of stuff. I can't think of particularly other situations in which an interview wants to make an author look bad. I just think that the tone of the interview of what we do, what you do, Fran, is just completely different. And very rarely is there going to be a confrontation of any kind.
Well, somebody actually asked me a political question a while ago, because it was based on what the author wrote. And they did ask me, I said, I really don't think you want my answer because it's going to disagree with the premise that you wrote in the book. And he got it. You could figure out what they wanted to know. The book was about this person. I didn't realize it when I got it. And last week I did one, and they said I was very, the guy said I was very diplomatic. It's called The Myth About Voter Suppression. It was extremely well-researched, very, very good. I got his point of view. And all I did was write what voter suppression was, voter purging, voter fraud, and some of the states that, you know, had problems with it. But I did not write my opinion as to whether I agreed or disagreed. I just wrote at the beginning, I'm just going to state the fact, and he thanked me for being honest, and he thanked me for giving him a review that, you know, didn't state my opinion, because I don't believe in panning somebody's book. But I could tell you that. I could tell you whose side he was on, too.
You were probably one of the only people who gave him a down the middle interview, or a down the middle review, and he probably really appreciated that because he was getting it from both sides. Yeah.
Yeah, he did. But I read the book twice, and I'm going like, it took me a while to type up the report, and then of course my computer didn't like it, so I had to do it over because it made it disappear. Then I it's a good thing I wrote it over. I was going to type it and write it and just say, here, you figure it out. So is there anything, did anybody ever ask you why you decided to become an author and what inspired you or what surprises when you write something?
I think interview I've done has asked that question. So I don't know about the rest of you, but that's a very, very good and very common question. I ask that question to a lot of people too.
Yeah, it's common. And if you're a good, if you're good at giving interviews, you can give different answers. I mean, different but the same.
That's
what you don't want is saying is someone saying, by the way, do you have a backup for this career? You don't want to hear that question.
No, somebody did ask me that. They said, we know you taught for a lot of years. Somebody actually had the gall to look me up. And I said, your point is, I'm a reading and writing specialist. I said, I'm a new author. I don't claim to know everything. I said, I'm just learning. I said, but when it comes to teaching kids with disabilities, there's nobody better. And that was the end of that. No, seriously, I'm still doing it, so I must know what I'm doing. But if you were going to create like five questions, what would be one of the most important questions to start an interview with that you would, you know, make the author feel comfortable, especially somebody that's brand new and has no clue what they're going to go through, but the publisher said you got to do it?
It would probably be something like we just talked about, like how did you decide or how did you become a writer? Very simple. And open-ended enough that the person will answer, and then we can kind of move into what the book is about. But yeah, it's kind of like that.
I was disappointed Monday because I really wasn't up to myself, never mind why, and I had to cancel the interview, and I was upset because it was a girl. It was called "Taking Back My Soul" by Maya Oba. She was sold by her father to a man that was 20 years older than her that abused her all her life, and she lived in Mumbai. And she wanted to share it, and I'm disappointed that they didn't. I called her at 7 o'clock in the morning to tell her, I'm sorry, I can't do this. And I said I would do it even the next day. So I don't think I'm going to get to do that one. And I was disappointed because I thought it was really an important topic for people to talk about for abuse. So if you were going to pick several general topics other than your novels to talk about, like Vincent, we're going to talk about outrageous characters. What are some areas that you would like to talk about on an interview that are different besides your book?
Well, keep me
researching, people.
I just have an answer, Fran, to your previous question before we move on, which is like, what's a good question to ask somebody? And this isn't so much for the first-time author, but one that I use a lot and I find it's very effective is to ask them why they think their book and their character is so popular. I just did this with Kathy Reeks, and her big character, of course, is from Bones, is, you know, Temperance Brennan. And, you know, this has been TV shows and bestsellers. And it's a very simple question, but you generally get a pretty good answer, you know, which is, why do you think readers and viewers like your character so much? And it, you know, this is the person that created it. And, you know, first off, there's no way they're not going to answer that question. And a lot of the authors
answer that question. You'd be surprised. Sometimes they don't want to say, well, I created the character, and whether people, readers like it or not, sometimes they don't want to answer that. And that's a good question. To start with, I mean, I asked yesterday, the other question I asked yesterday was, and this book was really written in 1917, I said, how did you decide to write about Cairo in 1917, and what are the differences about it now? And she thought that was a great way to start talking about the book and how she created both characters.
Yeah, I think if you don't want to presuppose that everybody loves the protagonist, I mean, you could kind of ask in an open-ended way, you know, can you tell us a little bit about your protagonist and their journey?
Yeah.
You know, why are they passionate about what they're going? Because that's something that really any fiction book should have and would probably set people on the right path as far as what they want to talk about.
Well, the authors next week wanted the questions, so they're going to have to just deal with my questions. So before we end, who's got something coming out that I don't know about? And where can we find out about everybody?
I don't have anything right now. I've got a couple of books out on submission here, so I'm not going to be putting anything out in the immediate future. I'll definitely let you know when I do. My website is jeffbondbooks.com, though, for the stuff that's already out there for anybody interested.
And for me, I have What Death Taught Terrence and The Santa Claus Agreement. Those are my two novels. The Santa Claus Agreement is, we're going to do a soft relaunch next Christmas. I've got the new audiobook from B.J. Harrison. He's going to narrate it. He's great. And that will be coming out probably in October from Papillon Dupere Publishing. And then my website is, it's my name, it's DerekMcFaddenEditor.com.
I might need you, seriously. Not just saying.
Yeah, I'm here if you need me, Fran, honestly.
My editor died two weeks ago. Maxine died.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no.
That's why I got insulted when they said that the book was not edited right. She edited a part of Accusation. Somebody else finished it. And then she edited the half of the book that I started to write, and I couldn't sit down and write it. I'm going to finish it and dedicate it to her. But Maxine was a World Castle editor, but she did freelance for me, and she was really quite reasonable. She was great. But if I need you, Derek, I know where to go.
Yeah.
Seriously,
oh, yeah.
Because
right,
I take criticism with you know, characters or content, and if you tell me something needs to be fixed, I'm not going to tell you whatever. So,
I appreciate
Dick, what about you and what about Lee?
I have a book in family proverb in 19.
You might want to repeat that. We didn't get most of it.
Yeah,
I can't hear you.
I have a book coming out in November that's called The Great Dimmelmans, and it's about a family of bank robbers in 1980.
Make sure I get it.
Yeah, absolutely, Fran.
Well, I'll just jump in. My latest Claire Charleston book, I just wanted to say it's selling an ebook for $1.99 all month, as all of them.
Oh, cool.
$1.99. I know you don't read ebooks, Fran, but a lot of the world does. So hopefully, some people will take advantage to get to know the Claire character. And then my next Claire Charleston book is coming out January 2nd of 2024, and then I have three thrillers coming out in the late spring of 2024 that are going to be written under my pen name of. Dana Perry.
You're giving Zandria a run for his money there, Dick.
I'm trying to at least on that level, but I don't travel like he does, so he's still way ahead of me.
No, he usually sends me a couple of half a dozen at a time. I'm serious.
Man on the Run is out now, and you gave it a great review, Fran. And then all five of my swans are being put on audio.
I love swans.
So so they're starting to release them, I think, in June or maybe even now. So that's and I have a website just with my name. So that's it.
Well, this has been fun, and it kept me awake. It's a good thing my husband said to me, don't you have a show? I go, oh, right. I'm telling you, my niece keeps me busy, and I truly hope that this is – my last degree was in respiratory therapy.
Well, it's my actual birthday today, Fran, so I want to thank
happy
you
birthday.
For my
happy birthday.
Like,
yes.
I woke
and
up
Dick,
to this. I
happy
appreciate
birthday.
It, you guys.
Happy 21st birthday.
I
don't do numbers, and my sister-in-law did that for my last birthday. She sent me a card with my number, and they said, you got the wrong number. You must have the wrong person.
thanks for this, Fran.
That's okay, but you walk into a doctor's office, they ask you the date of birth, and they go, I forgot, I'm sorry, my Alzheimer's, don't remember. I won't tell them. Because then they talk to you like you're old. But thank you guys so much. This actually brightened my day. Everybody, stay safe. Have a great day. And bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everybody.